este cuento.
Águila y cóndor se encuentran en la cima de una cordillera, sembrando un mensaje que llega al interior de la madre tierra, que nos dice que venimos de la misma fuente y del mismo lugar. Todos somos de la tierra, del fuego, del aire y del mar, que nos dice que venimos de la misma fuente y del mismo lugar.
All right, all right. It's time to settle in, be present, and be. This is episode number 53. I hope this finds you all in good spirits. This is Giants Amongst Us, a place where we share in the unique human experience. And this is where you're going to hear real stories that are told by real people. People just like yourself. So if this is your first time tuning in, what we do over here is we talk story, we share human connections, and you're going to hear people from all walks of life with different challenges, different struggles, different demons that they had to face, their own walk through the desert or the wilderness alone, those trying times, those hard times. But the commonality is what changed in their attitude, what shifted in their perspective to where they put themselves in a position to start creating new realities and new experiences for themselves, to start working towards healing, towards growth, transforming their behaviors, their thought patterns, their inner dynamics. True growth, true change comes from the inside out. We have to be willing to look inwards. We have to be willing to become aware of what's happening inside of us so that we can get to the root and source of our attitudes, our behaviors, some habits maybe that have been maladaptive and destructive, even our own self-worth and self-talk. Sometimes it could be negative. Sometimes it could be limiting. These conditions that we've accepted as reality, where do they come from? Do they come from a place of truth and love, or do they come from place of fear? And ultimately, these are questions only we're able to answer once we start getting honest with ourselves and, you know, being willing to take that ride through that inner terrain that a lot of us avoid for so many different reasons. It could be unpleasant, it's unfamiliar, it's foreign, uncharted territory, but that's where the gold is. But we have got to be willing to walk through that dry, desolate, barren desert where we might be stepping over skulls and bones, skeletons, old memories from the past, experiences that are still haunting us. We've got to be willing to walk past that, to walk through it in order to find the land of milk and honey, the promised land. Through all these trials and tribulations that we've gone through collectively, you and I, those experiences are designed to point us towards a higher reality, but not everybody is up for the call. Some are happy and satisfied with where they're at and with how things are going, and that's fine. So let me tie this all back into our conversation today, because today we're going to explore that mysterious and often terrified realm of the afterlife. Is there a life after death? Is it pitch black and quietness? Is it peace and still? Is there a hell? Is there a heaven that awaits us with pearly gates? And those are a lot of questions that I'm sure many of you have entertained once or twice in your life. And that brings us to the conversation at hand. Today, Bob joins us, and he's got a story to tell.
Once you're on the other side and you are enveloped in this unconditional love, you see where you did things that were not loving. You see where you harmed others. And moreover, you don't see it only from your own point of view, but you will see it from the point of view of the other. You become the other. And that's a real the most direct way of understanding what another goes through.
Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, this is Bob in his story. This ties into the human experience in general, because this show, this is what I like to do, is just engage with people from all walks of life who a lot of them have overcome different struggles and challenges. But this is having to do with the human experience in a different way. And just to give you a backstory of another reason why this was so interesting to me with your research and your studies with near-death experiencers is the fact that when I was younger, I don't even think I was a teenager yet, maybe 11, 12, but there was this deep obsession that I had with death for some reason. So young, I was terrified of it. I was afraid of it. I would have nightmares of falling, an endless pit of just darkness. And I haven't really told too many people. My wife knows. Now I guess there's going to be a few other people that do know about this, but this was something that was, it was almost paralyzing. I couldn't stop thinking about it. I was afraid of it. I had anxiety because of it. And I just would have these reoccurring nightmares of falling in a dark pit, or the theme was just darkness. But I don't know exactly when that went away and that kind of lifted from my consciousness, that burden. But this was something that I have been fascinated with a long time. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's a lot of other people, they have their anxieties about death, and that can translate into the way they live their lives in the real world, if they're able to enjoy life and to live a life that is fulfilling in any way, and paralyzed with not to be able to appreciate the here and now, because they're so worried about what can happen tomorrow and what's going to happen after I leave this world. So enough of all that, Bob. I just want to thank you for joining the show. And how are you doing today?
Yeah. Well, my day was well filled. I was catching up with old emails, and then I went to one of the children that I look after and help with their Dutch and arithmetic. And that was very nice. It's a young child of 9 years old, and he's having difficulties in school, and I try to be his mentor. So that's what I did.
Oh, that's great. That's great. That's true. You're retired now, correct?
Yes. Yeah, I'm retired. Yeah, well, I have too much to do. So there's a lot of other things that I do. I work also for our pension fund and for the housing society, and I do this with children. And next to that, apart from that, I also look into near-death experiences, because that is my topic. That's the thing that I'm really interested in. And that's where I wrote several books for or about this topic. And the latest one, Impressions of Near-Death Experiences, is one that I really liked, because there are so many quotes of NDEers that are very interesting to just delve into.
Yeah.
It's a multiple of these quotes of more than 100 NDEers, near-death experiencers, and altogether there are hundreds of quotes in the book. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I reached out to you via email, and you were, you know, gracious enough to be on. And what also caught my attention was, because you hear a lot of stories, I was down that rabbit hole one of many times, and you hear different stories and different accounts. But I like the take on your research and your studies is the fact that a lot of these accounts and testimonies have been verified, correct? From nurses and medical staff that have been in the room.
Yeah, that's I think the most important part of telling about near-death experiences to others, because these stories in itself are very nice. They're almost fairy tale-like stories. It's so nice, with unconditional love and a good feeling on the other side, welcoming feeling. It's such a nice, always such nice stories. But are they real? And that's where I think circumstantial evidence is very important, especially when they come from nurses or people bystanding, and they confirm independently that the NDE-er had seen the right things. I'll give you an example. The first phase of an NDE is most of the time where people leave their body and see their own body from a distance, most of the time from just below the ceiling. And if it's in an operating dome, they see what the doctors do or what the nurses do. Most of the time, they will be able to recount the whole procedure. And sometimes things are very odd or very special during this procedure. And they are able to tell that because they see it happening. So you have to imagine you're lying there on a stretcher or wherever, you're out. Nevertheless, you can see everything because the spiritual part of you or your spirit or your ghost is outside your body and can see everything. And there are hundreds of these accounts that have been verified independently. And that's where it starts to be important, because this gives us circumstantial evidence that these near-death experiences are based in real stuff, that they are actually real.
Right. Just to go back a bit, could I ask you what piqued your interest, or how did you get involved with being so interested in near-death experiences?
That's because I was always very much interested in spirituality. I was raised Roman Catholic, but that didn't give me the right answers, because there was hell and purgatory there, and that didn't sit well with me. Not that I just didn't want to have that. It's supposedly that not everyone goes to heaven according to Roman Catholicism, but it was more that it didn't resonate with me. And then I read Raymond Moody's book, and that's the guy who coined the term near-death experiences. He came up with these kind of experiences because he was a medical doctor, and he, in his practice, there were a number of people who had such an experience. And in his book, which was published in 1976, I read about people who had such an experience. And in that experience, sometimes they have a life review. And that's what it is. It's, you see your life, you can go into details, you can see every little thing you did to someone else or you did for someone else. But you see it also from the other side. You see it from the person that is connected with you or that you did something for or something against. But the interesting thing was that if you look at all these NDEs with life reviews, they never speak about judgment. They say there is no judgment. And that is typically where in Roman Catholicism, you're being sent to the left or to the right, or maybe you go to purgatory and you can stay there for a while and then hope to go to heaven. But there is a hell and purgatory in Catholicism. And in near-death experiences, there is no such thing. It is, everyone is welcomed there. There's unconditional love for everyone, and it's unconditional. And the ears really say that they stress the unconditionality of the love that is received on the other side. So it doesn't matter what you have done, whether you're a nice person according to our morals nowadays, or where you have been a bad person, but everyone will receive that unconditional love. That's the idea that comes from near-death experiences.
That could be encouraging for, say, somebody who has we all have our past, and we've made mistakes. We've acted out of selfishness and carelessness, and some can, we can hold on to it, and we have a hard time forgiving ourselves. But also, yes. Does that, I want to play not the devil's advocate.
Do that. That's good. Yeah. It's good that you do that. Yeah.
I mean, just say for somebody on the outside saying, well, then that just gives someone a license to kill, to eat, drink, be merry, harm anybody, yeah. because they know that they're going to get roses and they're going to get a nice parade at the end of the day anyway. So
yeah, you could see it like that, but that's not how it really is, because once you're on the other side and you are enveloped in this unconditional love, you see where you did things that were not loving. You see where you harmed others. And moreover, you don't see it only from your own point of view, but you will see it from the point of view of the other. You become the other. And that's a real, the most direct way of understanding what an other goes through according with your actions. So whatever you did, you will see what the other went through with your actions. And that is something that you will always like very much, because you understand the pain on the other side. You will feel the pain on the other side firsthand. You will feel it as if you are that other person. So it's not a license to kill. A nice phrase, by the way, but it's different.
Yeah, I was raised, when we were younger, we would go to Catholic church, and then there was a time where I had a friend of mine, he invited me to a Christian church, and I did. It was a Pentecostal church, and I really was devoted. I was sold on that idea for about a year, 2 years. I was preaching the Bible. I was going door to door, and I was outreaching. And I'm like, you need to see the light and turn from your sinful ways. But also, I had questions. I had my doubts, and the answers that I was getting and what I was feeling inside wasn't satisfying. And that's when I decided to turn from it. But there are a lot of people also that do have the I've spoken with ex-cult members and Jehovah's Witnesses. Some of these members, they consider the body of religion, they consider it a cult. And so that's just coming from their own words. But the traumatization of the hell and fury, that the fire and brimstone, and there's no escape from it. But I like that idea that you say, that after we move from this life and this life review and what we've done to somebody and what we've done to ourselves, we're actually not just going to see what we've done to somebody else and how they experienced it, but we're going to experience it for ourselves. That puts a different light on it.
Yeah, but from the other side, we will experience it from the other side. So you have both point of views, but you also have an independent point of view. That's what I understand from so many NDEers. So you have three points of views. Your own point of view, the point of view of the other, and some other neutral point of view without any judgment.
You know, and that also brings to mind of how a lot of religions in their own way have that rule where it's treat others the way you would want to be treated.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, all of the religions that I know of that have that golden rule some way or another. So it's sometimes it's said in a different way, but it's the same thing all over again. Don't treat others the way you'd like to be treated yourself.
Right.
And that's it, yeah. And I just wanted to mention also, when you see what you did to others as if you are the other, there's still no judgment on the other side. It's not necessary, because you can. There's one person that said very nicely, there was a little boy, 14 years old, and he saw his life review in the presence of an angel. That's what he said. And then he asked the angel, what happens now? And then the angel said, you will be judged by the most powerful judge there is. And then the little boy said, when will that happen? And then the angel says to him, it already happened. The judge, that's you. So it means that if there is a judge, the judge is you. And even then, there are stories where people, were very sad and negative about what they did to others. And then the light or the angels or the spiritual beings who are present there would take their point of view and would just say, don't be so hard on yourself. Don't judge yourself too harshly. There's a reason why you did that, that you came from somewhere. And so did the other people who did something to you. We all come from somewhere. There's always a reason why we do things that we do. But the main message is always that love is very important. And if we concentrate on it, it will grow. If you give a lot of love, you'll really love to see your life review. You will be enthusiastic about it. Still no judgment.
I encountered a lot of accounts, and I would assume that you've also spoken with some of these people. You've had conversations with them and some dialogue in one way, shape, or form. Have you ever came across any that have described some type of form, way, shape of a hell or what the Bible does speak of, where you have this, because I've heard of accounts of this in interviews, but not to say that I know if there was any circumstantial evidence to prove. If this is just somebody speaking and you have to take it subjectively, and I don't know if you've heard anything personally or have come across people explaining or sharing some type of experience like that.
Yeah, and the answer is yes. That's a short answer. I came across people who have had such an experience, and in research, and we know that there are people who have had a very distressing NDE, a very distressing near-death experience. And let me explain to you that this is still a subset of the number of NDEs that we have out there. Although it's difficult to put a number on it, because typically people who have had such a distressing NDE will not be happy to come forward. So the number of people that we see may be smaller than the number that there are out there. But it's still, something like 5 to maybe 20% of the people who come forward with an NDE say they have had some kind of distressing element in it. So the distressing element can be very small or insignificant. One of the things, for instance, is people who travel through tunnel. When you exit your body, some people talk about traveling through a tunnel at a high speed, and that, for some people, that's a distressing element. If you subtract those from the number, then there's still a smaller number, but still there are people out there that have had a real distressing NDE with hellish elements in it. But we have researched that as well. And one of the things we came to a conclusion, and we is not myself only, but other researchers, is that you cannot say that people who have had a distressing NDE have been bad people, apart from how do you define bad people, because morality changes in the course of time. And people who've had a blissful NDE are not always very nice people, are not like a saint kind of people. There are examples of people who have had been killing a lot of others. In this case, there's an example, who killed a lot of people for an American organization, one of the government organizations, and he went abroad. And he still had a blissful NDE. His life review was horrible, but the rest of his experience was wonderful, because in his life review, he saw each of his kills as he said that. He said, I saw the lives of the people that I killed. I became the receiver. That's what he said, a receiver, being the other person, the person that he killed, but also the wives of these people that he killed and the children of the people that he killed. He was able to feel all the feelings of everyone around. And he said that was really distressing. But the rest of my experience was really blissful, because I got unconditional love anyway. And then there are people that have led a very common life who talk about a distressing NDE with distressing elements in it. So we cannot say that if you have had a distressing NDE, you must have been a bad person. And if you had a blissful NDE, you must have been a very good person. So there must be another reason why people have such an experience. And the theory is that people have such a distressing experience because elements from the collective consciousness pop out and then come into your mind, or things that come from your own personal conscious. So the things you have experienced in life, there is an example that comes to my mind is of a woman who had been raped several times and who was so much afraid of AIDS and had a very confining religious upbringing with also hell and purgatory. And she had the whole charade with horrible things, with rapes in her near-death experience and attracting AIDS and things like that. So it was a very distressing, kind of hellish experience that she had. But later she could really say also, well, that's because I had all these judgments, all these ideas, all these traumas that I had on earth. And that's why I had all this stuff in my near-death experience. Now, having said this, I also have to tell you that there are near-death experiencers who explicitly tell me that there is no hell and purgatory. So, and that's what I believe. I think it is something that plays in your mind or of some people's minds who have a near-death experience, but it eventually will disappear because of what I just said, and also because of what some near-death experiences tell me, that there is no hell and no purgatory. We all go there to this other worldly environment. That's a wonderful environment.
Wow, that's a lot of neat information. That was something that I contemplated on a while back. Just when, even to this day, this is something that I'm more at peace with death now. I'm not terrified of it. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking for it either. I like to enjoy the time that I have here, but I have a better relationship with it, and it's just a part of life. I feel as if we're spiritual beings having a human experience.
Exactly. That's also what NDEers say. Exactly that.
And for the longest, I also thought when I would hear of all these different accounts with near-death experiences, I don't know the background, whether these near-death experiences were confirmed in any way, but you would hear so many different accounts of the hell, the torments, and you would also hear of heaven, or you would hear of a bright light, all these different accounts. And like you mentioned, with the collective consciousness, or maybe just a residue of what has been a belief structure in their being before they left and their spirit went elsewhere, united with the collective, that this was what they experienced because this is what they knew beforehand. And so it was kind of the residue that was left.
But again, I just want to stress that the majority of the NDEs are really blissful and only a subset are distressing. And in a number of cases, we can pinpoint why that is, because of traumas, because of personal experiences, things like that.
Have you, with the accounts that you've studied and researched, have you did any follow-up, say a year after or 2 years after, to see where they're at, if it changed, if there was some kind of long-lasting impact on the way that they viewed life or the way that they were living their life?
Well, that's interesting that you ask. There have been very nice researches done, prospective researches, that's a technical term to tell that they are reproducible. So you can do that somewhere else, the same protocol, and then see what the outcome is. The first of such a study was done in my country, in the Netherlands, and then others were done in the United States and the UK with the same kind of outcome. And then the study in the Netherlands, they also had a time study in the sense that they asked people 1 year later, and I think 8 years later.
Oh, wow.
About their NDE. And the interesting thing was that the NDE didn't change. So the story they had was the same. The narrative was the same. So they didn't add to it and they didn't subtract from it. Most of the time, they even used the same words. So it is totally different from a dream, because a dream you just forget very soon. And a hallucination has no narrative. That's just a chaotic thing that goes on in your mind. But these experiences are lasting in the sense that even 8 years after the fact, people still had the same recollection. And also it was coherent. There's a storyline in it. It's not a chaotic thing like in a hallucination.
Well, that's pretty impressive. Now, especially if we're talking about 8 years after, to recall a story or to recall an experience and to have it very, very similar, if not exact, to the way that you first described it, because I just know, going back on when I say something, and if I'm thinking 8 years later for me to recall that and speak it, it's going to be completely different. So this had to be a very impactful experience that impressed.
Oh, they are so impactful.
Right.
Really, they are life-changing.
Yeah. That was another reason why I asked that, was because of the fact that not only of how it viewed their life, but, you know, if they were living a life that they weren't really satisfied with or content with or happy with. And so after that event, if you, with follow-up research, seeing that some people, they changed their lives and took a better course and started to do things differently because of that experience.
Well, yeah, in principle, yes. Most of the times people change their lives, they become less interested in money and less interested in power and more interested in other people and being together with others and in nature.
Oh, yeah.
They start loving nature. They start doing artworks, looking at the nice sides of life. So there's a real change. They become more spiritual, and there are several other aspects, after effects. Some people even become mediumistic or psychic.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, because the idea is, I think, that they have been on the other side, and when they had to come back again, the door is still ajar. So it doesn't really close all the way. So you still have some kind of information that you can find or get, or it is imprinted in you. And then they can see through time, or they can see things about your life, someone else's life, or they can see even deceased people. But these are the sort of the after effects. But the thing is that people, NDEers, I want to stress, they don't become saints, even though they have been on the other side and they have seen the light and God and you know who. They still don't become saints, because they still are human beings with their flaws that they were born with or that they nurtured during life. But they understand that. They most of the time they come back with the idea that love is very important, that every person's life is important, no matter what. Even the lives of people that we find unimportant, like maybe the beggar in the street, or you just name it. Every single life is important. That's what they say. So that's what, and not one, they say that all. Every person is important. And people that have challenges, it is important to struggle with these challenges and to try to get out of these challenges and solve them, or to come out of the struggles that you are in. But the main thing that I understand from NDEers is that love is the most important thing. So if you look for love, if you give love, then that's you're doing the right way already. So you're halfway there.
I hope everybody's enjoying the conversation so far with Bob in talks and explorations and accounts of the afterlife. Real quick, something I just would like to invite anybody who is really into the show. You don't even have to be really into the show, but you appreciate the show. And you value these conversations, these topics. You value sharing in the human experience, and you'd like to support the show. One thing and one way you can support the show free of charge, it's not going to cost you a dime, just maybe a few minutes of your time, is you can go over to the links that are in the show notes, and you can click on one of those links, and it'll send you over to a platform where you can leave a rating or you can leave a review. That's going to do one of two things. It's going to help these conversations and these stories fall in the ears of new listeners. And it can also help us on the back end if you're leaving some kind of constructive criticism, things we can do to maybe better the overall listening experience and to continue to create something that is both meaningful and valuable. This is truly a passion project. You can always get updates on the show. You can listen to past stories and past guests, and you can read up on extra miscellaneous articles and thoughts at giantsamongstus.org. Now let's get back to Bob and his studies of the afterlife.
Interesting. Just to mention, there's one of these NDEs was a little child. The story comes to my mind suddenly. And she was abducted by two men, and she was drowned. Right. They were trying to drown her. And then she had her near-death experience, and she went through this tunnel. Not everyone has a tunnel, so every NDE is different. But she went through the tunnel. At the end of the tunnel, there was this elderly person who blocked the way and who said, you're not done yet on Earth. You have to go back. And she said, that must have been God. No one else is there, so it must be God. And she had a conversation with him. Even though he blocked the way, he had a conversation with her, and he said, you have to go back. Life is not too difficult. There are four ingredients you just have to abide by, and those are the next ones, the following ones. So it's love, be loved, just be, and experience life. So love, be loved, just be, and experience life. Well, love and be loved, those are very important in itself, because so many NDEers say that. So you have to give love away, allow others to give you love, which is sometimes also very difficult. Just be who you are. You're good enough as you are. And then experience life. Enjoy life also. That's also the idea. Just also enjoy the things that we can enjoy, like the wind in your hair or the sunshine on your face or the niceties that people give to you or that you can give to someone else. Do you name it? Smile to others. Those things are important too. Just enjoy that.
That's so simple. Love, be loved, be.
It is.
And enjoy and experience life, and those are so simple but powerful. I know what you mean when you spoke of some people find it hard to receive the love sometimes because we feel we're not worthy enough. You feel as if you're not deserving enough, and this can come from a lot of different reasons. Maybe you were told that when you were younger. Maybe there was a...
Yeah, maybe you learned it not to accept love, or you're not worthy of it, or whatever reason. Receiving love is a difficult thing too.
And it can also be when you receive love, this can also... You're leaving vulnerability because now you can also have the feeling of that love maybe going away or being taken away, and now there's a hurt in your heart, and so that leaves vulnerability. But that's part of the experience, isn't it? The emotions that you're dealing with, the good and the bad, and you embrace all of
exactly. And the other thing is that there is also a feeling of interconnection between people. So there are, if you ask me, there will be two things that I think are very important from an NDE. The first one is the love part that we discussed just now, but there is also the notion of the interconnection between people. So many people with an NDE come back and they say, we are so closely connected with everyone, also with the people you don't like. We can always think of someone that we don't like. It could be a politician or the neighbor around the door on the other side of the block or someone at work. But we are interconnected with everyone, every single person on earth and every animal with whole nature. There are also people with NDEs that say we are all one. And what I just mentioned before with the life review is that you can feel what another feels as if you are the other. That's a very direct way of being the same person as the other. You become the other for a little time. So the interconnection goes further than just being interconnected. It's like we are others. We are each other. And that's the reason why we have to be, well, we don't have to do anything, but it's nicer if we are nice to each other. That's also what I try to explain to people. If you look at the conflicts in the world, like now in Israel, with Israel and Gaza, or Russia and Ukraine, the people that are shooting at each other, they will feel what the other side feels. As if they are the other side, they will understand where the other side comes from. So the Hamas people will understand the Israeli side, and the Israeli people will understand the Palestinian side. That's the reason why I say just stop it, because you're hurting yourself. You will be hurting yourself because you will feel what the other side goes through as if you are the other, because we are the same. We are one. There is an interconnection. And that interconnection goes very deep. And that means that what I do to another, I will feel for myself.
Yeah, I've heard that often from people in different ways, and even from old text and even religious scriptures, different religious scriptures. But that the fact that what you're doing to other people is what ultimately what you're doing to yourself. It also, if you just think about the way that you're harming your fellow brother or your fellow sister, that translates into the chaos and the what we see in a world today, where it could be just a lot of violence or, like you said, the wars and things. I mean, it's just a ripple effect of what goes on from a smaller scale, and it just spills out into a larger scale and affects humanity at large.
And what you mentioned just now, the word ripple effect, is something that is mentioned by NDEers also. So whatever you do, it has an effect somewhere. It may not be in your environment, but it will be somewhere. Let me give you an example there, because there was a woman who had a near-death experience, and in her near-death experience, she saw her life review. But when it was over, she thought, well, that was not too bad. She was satisfied. And then they played her life review all over again and showed the little things, the small moments, the insignificant moments, where she was in the line at the cashier, or where she was in the car, or where she was crossing a street. And she could have smiled to someone because she said, she gave an example. She saw this person that if she had smiled at this guy at that moment in the street, and this guy would have not gone home so very angry, because that was the feeling that he was crossing the street with. And when he came home, he would bully and harass his wife and children. If she would have smiled, it would not have been that harsh. It would have, and that the smile is not big, but the effect is big.
I 100% agree that, and I think everybody can think back and recall a time or a place where something like that was evident. And I've been there also, where there was just one moment where you're at the brink of losing it, and somebody, a stranger, just randomly, and normally this wouldn't happen. It's like, why does this happen? Why is he doing this now? Was very kind and just giving a smile and saying something that lifted my spirits up and completely changed the way I was viewing my situation and circumstance in that moment. And who knows, had that not happened, maybe I would have snapped and like that ripple effect. I would have just released my anger, my tension, my frustration on somebody else. But because of that, it just alleviated all of that inner animosity and just calmed the storm.
Yeah, that's a wonderful example. But then from the other side, where someone does something nice to you and it changes your whole perspective. That's the reason why we should do that to others. We should go into the street and smile at people, be nice to people, say some nice words. Yeah, because it has an effect. It does.
Yeah. That was a big, big part of why I reached out to you from the beginning, was because like we spoke before we started recording, was just all of the chaos and the turmoil that's happening in real time around us. And so this is a message that I think can, if people were to embrace it, to be open about it and to just to entertain it a bit, that can maybe knock down a lot of barriers and help us just find that common ground that we are, like you said, the interconnectedness. And I don't know how you feel about this, and I don't want to maybe sway too far away from what your research and studies are, but the interconnectedness, you hear also people speak about this when they do have these, these psychedelic experiences, when they're now, like, there's some where you have, they have it in a safe environment. They have it in, there's a container set. And so they have their ceremony and they're off into the ether. But you also hear these accounts and these stories of people being connected to the all universal mind or the universal energy and this oneness. And also I've heard accounts of people saying something similar to where they felt what it was to hurt. They felt the hurt of somebody else that they have hurt. So pretty much as if they were that person. And this, it reminds me of it. And I don't know how you feel about that, or if that is something that you ever looked into at one point.
You're referring to DMT probably.
DMT, yeah. And also ayahuasca.
Yeah, ayahuasca. It's not part of my study, but what I think is that these things that I mentioned to you before, the theoretical observations, so the verifiable out-of-body experiences where people see what the nurses and the doctors do.
Right.
I'm not sure that is, you need something like that to confirm that stuff with ayahuasca and DMT works the same way as an NDE. And I'm not aware of any study of that. But maybe ayahuasca or DMT does give you partial experiences like NDEs or aspects of NDEs, but it may not give you the whole experience with out-of-body feeling and the feeling of light and seeing deceased relatives and having meaningful conversations with them and seeing your life review and stuff like that. So the whole charade which you have with an NDE, I'm not sure that I've ever heard a story where people said something like that with ayahuasca or DMT. But I think it needs more study to rule out or rule in that this is the same start.
Mm-hmm, definitely. So with all of the research, the books that you've written, the most recent book and all of the accounts and testimonies, what are, just if I can get your personal take on the afterlife?
Yeah, well, in my book, Impressions of Near-Death Experiences, the things that stood out for me the most were, unconditional love. That is something that is being said over and over again. I knew that already before I started out with this book, Impressions of Near-Death Experiences. But the other thing was that I really understood that we are so closely connected with each other, but that it goes even further than that, that we are in fact one. We are all one. There's only one source, or that you could even say that we are God, or that God is us. And if you, and what I did is to take that into extremes. Just think about it, that there's only one source. Suppose there's one source, and from it are little drops, and they are the people. There's 8 billion people, 8 billion little drops coming from the source, and there's also animals. And we interact with each other as if we are two drops separate. So what I do in my life, you will not feel, or the other way around. Or if I hurt you, I will not feel it, because we are different drops. We're two different aspects or little things from the source. But once we die and we come back again and we reunite into the source, all the information is there. That's what I said with the life review. I will feel what I did to you as if I am you, because we are the same source. We're the same substance. We reunite again with the substance, with the source, and then we will know. We will know exactly what happens in your life. And it seems like it's very interesting to have all these lives. That's what I said with what the little girl came up with. Just experience life. That's the nice thing. Just be. Experience life. Also the nasty things or the painful things. I know you have so many people in your program with struggles or with challenges, but they are important too. Of course, it's nicer to get out of the challenges and out of the struggles, but always realize that there is unconditional love for everyone, also for all the people that have challenges or struggles. It doesn't matter. We're all the same source, the same substance.
That's something now, like I mentioned earlier, I had my own encounters with religion and my thoughts of death and my fears of death. But as I've gotten older and I'm still a work in progress, but
we are all work in progress.
Tell me about it. So this is especially what you mentioned about your own personal take after the research and the studies and the books that you've written and the accounts and everybody that you have spoken with regarding near-death experiences. And that this resonates more with me. It's like a blossoming inside of me where this is something that I'm feeling more comfortable with. And it's almost like when you settle into a truth. And so it was a long time coming, and this was a big reason why I was just interested to hear your take on it and the studies, and especially the fact that you have followed up 8 years later and the accounts have remained the same, even the words have remained the same, and they have lasted, the impact has lasted for so long, where it changed their perspective, the way that they interacted with life and the world around them and the people around them. And so that's a beautiful thing, and that's a beautiful message also, is just the four ingredients: to love, to be, to be, and to experience. Wow, I mean, it's so simple, but my goodness, wouldn't that make a world of a difference if everybody would have put that into practice?
Yeah, and just that everyone realizes that no one is, that we should not look down on anyone, because we all come from somewhere. There's always a reason why we do the things that we do. And just one correction, I didn't do the study about the 8 years later myself. It was done in the Netherlands by another group. But okay. That's a minor detail. But it's the other thing is also that it's that NDEers would love to go back to the other side again. They have some kind of homesickness to the other side, but they they are not looking for death because they realize that even though it's difficult to come back again in this body because our bodies are so confining, it is still important that we are here. Everyone is important. With your struggles, without your struggles, it doesn't matter. We are important to be here and to have that place on earth or in the society that we have.
The importance, the self-worth, I think that's something also that a lot of people are struggling with, and especially with the results of social media, where we can compare our lives with everybody else and you can feel as if you're in lack and look at what they're doing, look what I have. And so there's always a,
you're in lack. You have to stop doing that right away.
Yeah. So your impressions of near-death experiences, this is the most recent book that you published, correct?
Yeah, that's the recent book, yeah.
And this is your website, because you do have a few websites. I've seen that you have a couple of websites with, I guess, some of the works or the studies or things that you're involved with, and then also how people can find, because you have a handful of books, not just Impressions of Near-Death Experience.
Yeah, that's true. I had a book where I compared religions with near-death experiences. That was interesting to do, too.
Okay.
People can find me on my website. That's www.bobcopus.com. Mm. And they can always ask questions there, because I will answer always.
Yeah, perfect. I have the information and all of that I'm going to include in the show notes, so that anybody that's interested. My wife, she said, oh, this is going to be a good one, because she's also fascinated with the near-death experiences. And this is just the spirituality aspect of life, because we're spiritual beings having a human experience.
Yeah, interesting. A friend of mine asked me, it was a very interesting question. She said, why are you so preoccupied with death? And then I had to think about that. And then the answer that I came up with is actually the right thing, is that with near-death experiences, with understanding them, it's easier or nicer to live. It makes it somehow easier to go about your life, because you understand that the struggles are not there to punish you or to give you a nasty life. They are there as a stepping stones on the way to a higher kind of love. It's not for nothing that we have all these experiences to do in life. You know, if you really look into NDEs, you will appreciate life better. You will become like an NDEer. You will not be a saint, but you will appreciate life as it is.
That's interesting, you know, because that does beg to wonder, somebody who is studying death, and some would think that with that studies, that is going to maybe bring a pessimistic or a nihilistic attitude
in
a way of looking at life. But on the contrary, it sounds. And it seems like it's brought peace to you.
Absolutely.
The one ingredient, the main ingredient, is love. And so this is a wonderful message. But yeah, that's interesting to hear. And that reminds me of, I believe it was Marcus Aurelius in his meditations, and he spoke of stoicism, but he also, in one of his lines, he mentions something about the idea of fixating yourself on death and to imagine it and to experience it in your mind and in your imagination. And from that, the fruits will be gratitude and appreciation for life, for the here and now and the present moment. So and that reminds me of what you said, that with the studies of near-death experiences, this will bring you a new perspective on life and a gratitude and appreciation for the here and now.
Exactly. That's I couldn't say it better. That's how it is. Yeah.
Bob, I really, really appreciate your time. We went for about an hour, and I felt like you had a lot of great information in the main message and the core components and the ingredients. And your book, The Impressions of Near-Death Experiences, people, anybody listening, if they're interested, they could find links in the show notes. But if you have any final words or anything that you'd like to leave off with, feel free, my friend.
I said something about the woman who had her life reviewed twice, where she discovered that the small things are important. I would ask all your listeners just tomorrow, try to do that three times in a day. I try to do that every day, three times, smile at someone that I don't know. And it gives you wonderful reactions. Just try. You will enjoy it and it will have a ripple effect, a nice ripple effect. And that's something that I learned from Andy years.
Okay, let's do it. Let's do it. Smile at three strangers. And even taking it a step further, just wish them a nice day or something.
Yeah, or say something nice. Say it doesn't something. Matter what.
The littlest things can really mean the world to somebody.
Exactly. And, just as you said in your example, in your life.
Yes, exactly. Bob, thank you again. Once again, thank you so much for your time.
Richard, thank you for having me on your show. Thank you very much.
Hope you all enjoyed this conversation today. And a big thank you again to Bob for taking time out of his day to share some of his studies and his research and even some of his own personal thoughts about the afterlife. And let's not forget those two big messages from the NDEers that he has took an account in written with quotations in his book, one of them being the unconditional love, and the second one that we are all thoroughly interconnected with each other, the animals, with nature, and that it's this love and this energy that is binding. And in essence, when I stick my arm out, or even with the tongue, harm somebody and hurt somebody, I'm ultimately hurting myself. So if there's anybody listening who wants to know more about Bob or get your hand on any one of his books, you'll find all of his information in the show notes. And one more thing before we wrap it up, I'd like to thank all of you listening, every one of you listening that has invited us into your homes, into your airwaves, into your daily routine, into your commute to and from work, however it was. But thank you for spending and sharing some of your day with us. Hope you all have a great rest of the week. You know how to reach out to us. You know how to contact us. We're going to catch up and we're going to do this again real soon. You be safe out there. You be sane. Be the change that you wish to see. And let's go ahead and be kind to a stranger. We never know what somebody's going through, and sometimes the smallest of things can make that rippling effect that is going to change somebody's world for the better. Before I close shop, I'd like to remind you that if you would like to be a part of the show and share your story, or maybe even a story of someone in your life that has impacted you in a positive way, you could always reach out to us via email. We'd be happy to connect. Until next time, and very soon, peace. Do-wop, do-wop, do-wop,
do-do, do-wop, do-wop. Looking for a sign to know I'm on the right road. Ain't seen no signs since Jericho.